this is just a temporary moment of time that we will overcome together as a nation and as a world.
It's getting worse before it gets better. It's Friday, March 13th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Join us now live on Facebook. Also ahead this half hour, the U.S. is falling and failing in testing for the coronavirus, marking 100 years of women's suffrage in the United States and fighting the evils of junk food. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Currently, there are in excess of 127,000 cases of COVID-19 worldwide. As of Wednesday, the World Health Organization termed the coronavirus outbreak a pandemic. That's a label intended to prompt governments to take aggressive steps to protect the public. The AP's correspondent Jackie Quinn starts us off.
The World Health Organization was reluctant to use the pandemic label at first, but with the new coronavirus jumping from continent to continent and person to person, it meets the definition.
It is a call to action.
Dr. Leanna Wen at George Washington University says governments need to take drastic steps to contain the spread because hospitals will be overwhelmed if outbreaks intensify.
Tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of patients who need intensive care, we just simply don't have the beds, we don't have the ventilators, we don't have the supplies for these patients.
I'm Jackie Quinn.
Iran's health ministry said the new coronavirus has killed 75 more people, raising the death toll there to 429 amid over 10,000 cases, as the Islamic Republic revealed that it had asked for a multi-billion dollar loan from the International Monetary Fund to help fight the virus. Wednesday night, under mounting pressure to take action against the spread of the virus, U.S. President Donald Trump suspended travel from Europe to the United States.
The European Union failed to take the same precautions and restrict travel from China and other hotspots. As a result, a large number of new clusters in the United States were seeded by travelers from Europe.
With the recent suspensions of travel, schools, and sporting events in mind, Columbia University epidemiologist Dr. Elizabeth Radin tells VOA's Jason Patinkin what can be done to help mitigate the chances of contracting the coronavirus.
There's really a tremendous amount of guesswork and speculation circulating, particularly on social media, about tips and tricks for infection control to prevent getting the virus. I think one of the most important things in an outbreak is to have clear, consistent, accurate communication. So I would encourage anyone who's looking for information on this to go to the CDC website at cdc.gov, and they have really very clear and simple and science-based steps that you can take to protect yourself and that we can all take to limit the transmission of this virus. So first and foremost, if you're well, meaning you have no fever, cough, or shortness of breath, there's a few simple things you can do. One, avoid contact with people who are sick. Two, don't touch your face. And three, wash your hands regularly for 20 seconds with soap and water, or use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. And those are really the critical steps. That's what CDC is recommending right now for people who are well. Those are the core things to go back to, and that's what the science supports. There's a separate set of recommendations if you do have cough, fever, or difficulty breathing, and you've been in close contact with someone who either has a confirmed case of the disease or has traveled to an area where there's ongoing spread. And in that case, you would stay home. If you go out to get medical care, wear a mask, separate yourself from people in your household, wipe down surfaces, call your doctor before visiting, and not sharing basic household items like cups and plates with other people. These are kind of common sense things that you would do anyways if you had a flu or a bad cold. The third set of recommendations is really for healthcare professionals who need a different level of infection control. But for the majority of us will fall into category one, and it's really about the basic avoiding people who are sick, don't touch your face, and wash your hands. It's important to note that there's no recommendation right now for people who are not sick to wear face masks. In fact, please leave the face masks for people who might be sick and need to travel out to a doctor and for healthcare professionals. That's really a key public good that we can all do to promote infection control here.
It seems like masks are the thing that most people worried about the virus, at least when you look at photos of people worried about the virus, everyone's wearing a mask. So you're saying actually a mask isn't going to help you very much from stopping getting the disease.
Well, I'm saying the recommendation right now is not for people who are well to be wearing masks, and that in fact it's important that we leave the supply of masks more than sufficient for people who may be experiencing some symptoms, whether it's flu or potentially a case of coronavirus. Leave the masks for those people to wear them, and certainly for our health workers in health facility settings to have an ample supply. I think if there's question or concern, the CDC website is updated daily. It's worth continuing to check in there, but it's not recommended for people who are well to be wearing a mask in everyday life right now.
Essentially, if someone is feeling sick and may have the virus, if they're wearing a mask, that's a good way to keep the virus to them while they're heading to the doctor rather than potentially spreading it to others.
That's exactly right.
One last question about masks. One thing that I've heard is that wearing a mask may actually increase your risk because you end up touching your face and adjusting the mask, and so that just increases the hand-face contact, which could increase your susceptibility to the virus. Is there any truth to that?
It seems possible. It would probably depend on the case. I guess I'd go back to the underlying recommendation of limit touching your face. So anything that you can do to limit touching your face would be a good step to stay in line with that. And particularly since it's not recommended to wear a mask anyways, no need to kind of complicate that matter.
That was Dr. Elizabeth Radin, epidemiologist at Columbia University, speaking to VOA's Jason Patinkin. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. The Philippine president has suspended domestic travel to and from the Manila area for a month. Officials in Pakistan Thursday said the number of corona cases in the country has risen to 21, noting that 8 of them were imported from Syria. The U.S. military on Thursday repatriated what may be the remains of service personnel who were lost in action in Myanmar during World War II. And Chinese mountaineering officials will not allow spring climbs from their side of the mountain due to fears of the coronavirus. Read more and watch more at VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter, plus voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. As the coronavirus pandemic spreads, there is growing criticism in the United States about the lack of availability of tests for the virus, tests that are available to those in many other countries. VOA's Asia's Ira Melman has more.
Less than 10,000 Americans have been tested, according to lawmakers, while other countries have been able to complete more than that number of tests every day. The reason for that is that the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, chose the wrong way to administer the test, according to Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Fauci appeared before a congressional hearing in Washington Thursday.
The system is not really geared to what we need right now, what you are asking for. That is a failing.
Yes.
It is a failing. I mean, let's admit it. The fact is, the way the system was set up is that the public health component that Dr. Redfield was talking about was a system where you put it out there in the public and a physician asks for it and you get it. The idea of anybody getting it easily, the way people in other countries are doing it, we're not set up for that. Do I think we should be? Yes, but we're not.
I spoke with Dr. William Schaffner, a professor in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Vanderbilt University and a former CDC inspector, about the problems with testing.
I like to look forward rather than back, but I will acknowledge that there were glitches in putting testing widely available out throughout the United States. We all wished that that had gone smoother and faster. But now that we've got it, Let's do it and find out where the virus is in this country.
So how do people try to stay away from those who may subject them to the virus? Dr. Schaffner says by doing just that, by staying away from other people.
I've been impressed. The concept of social distancing is really being heard, and people are trying to apply it. Many colleges and universities have now said we're going to online learning. We're not going to gather together in classes. Businesses have said we're not doing meetings. We're having much less travel. Sporting events, I think many people are not attending sporting events. They'll watch them on television. So we're avoiding crowds in order to not become face-to-face, quite literally, with the coronavirus, because that's the way you get it. You get close to someone who's sick or who has the virus, they breathe out. If you're within 3 feet, you breathe in part, what they have exhaled, and then you can get affected. So let's stay apart from people to reduce the risk of transmission of the virus.
There are many questions that remain. One of the biggest is how long the coronavirus will be around.
There's no real way of telling. Now, what we all hope is that this coronavirus, a respiratory virus, acts like other respiratory viruses. Influenza, for example. And we all know influenza is very seasonal. It goes away once spring and summer start. There's a hope that this coronavirus will do that, but we're not sure. On the other hand, this coronavirus may actually go south of the equator. While we in the northern hemisphere have summer, they have winter. And there could be coronavirus epidemics in Australia, New Zealand, southern Africa, and all of South America. So we'll have to wait and see. And then, of course, it could cycle back and affect us in our winter once the winter starts. So I think this coronavirus is likely to be with us for a while.
I'm Ira Melman, VOA Asia.
Happening now in Asia, the United States is not ready to abandon its agreement with the Taliban in Afghanistan, but the general in charge of U.S. forces in the region says there are signs that the deal ultimately may be doomed. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The year 2020 marks the 100th anniversary of the U.S. Constitution's 19th Amendment, granting women the right to vote. Museums in Washington, D.C. and around the country are celebrating with exhibitions that tell the story of how women fought for voting rights. Maxim Moskalkov has more from the National Museum of American History.
American women fighting for the right to vote called themselves suffragettes, from the word suffrage, which means to vote. They painted signs, chained themselves to rails, attacked policemen with umbrellas, and stormed stores and government offices, organized rallies and demonstrations, all part of their fight.
Now, this exhibit looks at the way, the traditional story that we all remember of suffrage, and that's the story we were taught of Susan B. Anthony leading a gallant band of women on a long struggle for the vote. And that's a wonderful story, and it's not that it's not true, but it leaves out so many people.
These women who fought side by side and have made gains since then are the center of the exhibit at the National Museum of American History. Their personal belongings, hand-painted banners, badges, portraits and documents, even the wooden hammer of Nancy Pelosi, the first female speaker of the United States House of Representatives, all these items are part of the exhibit and part of the long battle women waged and still wage in their fight to civil and political rights.
So in this exhibit, we wanted to juxtapose the story of the people we know and wonderful icons that the museum has in their collection about those people, and to juxtapose them with the people that we're less familiar with, people like Mabel Lee, a young Chinese-American woman who fought for suffrage in New York City, although she herself, because Chinese-Americans were not considered citizens, would not benefit from the vote when the amendment was passed.
The 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution that granted women the right to vote was adopted in 1919, even though it was first proposed in 1878. Thanks to women who fought for voting rights, Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton among them, the amendment was finally ratified on August 18, 1920.
So we've juxtaposed suffrage with 1977 and the National Women's Conference in 1977, held in Houston, Texas, where women met together and came up with a legislative agenda that they sent to the President and Congress to enact for women's rights, and the 2017 Women's March, which was seen as a revitalization of the women's movement. And in both of those modern movements, the activists hearken back to the suffragists as inspiration and as role models.
The 2017 Women's March took place in multiple cities across the U.S. after the inauguration of President Donald Trump. Over 5 million people took part in the march, making it the largest single-day protest in the American history.
In the Women's March in 2017, we actually saw women carrying posters or the sash that you see in this exhibit, where they actually were echoing the suffrage movement. The 1848 to 2017 sash starts with Seneca Falls, which was the first time that women's suffrage was publicly advocated by women in this country.
Women have claimed their power and reclaimed the story and taken the narrative back from the prevailing narrative. One of the ways that that happened in 2017 was with the pussy hat that you can see on exhibit in this exhibit. It was an attempt to reclaim a word that was sometimes derogatory and make it something that would be celebrated and powerful.
The exhibit at the National Museum of American History has more than 60 objects on display, some of which were gifted to the Smithsonian by the National Women's Suffrage Association back in the 1920s. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news alert from VOA Asia, the death toll from the collapse of the coronavirus quarantine facility in East China rose to 29 Thursday as the final victim was recovered from the rubble. Dozens of people were pulled alive from the wreckage of the hotel, which collapsed Saturday night. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia.
Welcome to Entertainment News. In Washington, I'm Ira Melman, along with Larry London, the host of Border Crossings on VOA. And I guess we've reached an age, both you and I, where now we're talking about people's children.
That's right. It's kind of evolved full circle now.
Yes.
To the artists who are legendary, such as Annie Lennox, who is 60. She's a Scottish singer. And now her daughter, Lola Lennox, is getting into her mom's career choice. She's released her very first single, and we're going to check it out today. So let's listen to Lola Lennox and a song called In the Wild.
Is there anywhere you want to go? Is there anyone you want to see? Before we say goodbye. So meet me by.
Lennox says it's inspired by life and relationships and a breakup that she had, a number of years ago. She's been singing since she was 8 and writing songs like her famous mother since she was 15 and posting them on YouTube. And she's since that time, now she's 30, she's become an accomplished model. And she's also a video producer. She has worked on documentaries for her mom in concert. And she also starred in and produced a video filmed in Africa called Serengeti. which is about animals and wildlife there, and she's very fond of animals. But Lola Lennox, her real name, by the way, is Uri Fruchman, and she was born in Israel, and so she decided to change it so that her professional name is Lola Lennox, capitalizing on her mother's fame.
So what do you think? Good, bad, indifferent?
Yeah, I like it a lot. I think that, you know, Lola Lennox is a very interesting individual. She's got plans to release a bunch more music. She's got songs like Back It Wrong and La La Love Me and Pale all coming out before she releases a full-length album. But this is her first time in the music industry.
I wonder if mommy's proud. Is mommy supporting her?
I'll bet you your question is very valid. You know, probably, I have no idea of knowing, but I can only assume that mom would be thrilled and supportive of her daughter following in her footsteps.
We hope so anyway. He's Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. I'm Ira Melman, and this is your invitation to join us again next week.
This news break from VOA Asia. India has virtually shut itself off from the world in an effort to contain the spread of the coronavirus as it suspended entry for foreign nationals for a month, except for those from a handful of categories. India quarantines itself, screamed newspaper headlines as the government announced that foreigners would be barred starting Friday. This is VOA Asia. Americans are addicted to snacks, and food experts are paying closer attention to what that might mean for health and obesity. Eating habits in the U.S. have changed significantly in recent decades, and packaged bars, chips, and sweets have spread into every corner of life. In the late 1970s, about 40% of Americans said they didn't have any snacks during the day. However, by 2007, that figure was just 10%. VOA's Jaffer Hand has this look.
According to the National Center for Health Statistics of the United States, roughly 37% of U.S. adults consume fast food on a daily basis. The center found a significant rise in the number of severe obesity cases in very young children aged 2 to 5.
Thank you so much for having us here in your home.
Zubeda Falah, an Ohio-based Muslim entrepreneur, launched her snack bar company called Cure in June 2016 in an effort to end unhealthy food habits and raise awareness about proper nutrition and its benefits. To fight obesity and junk food habits, Falah created a line of organic healthy bars for all. The idea came to her when she was teaching math and English to kids.
I would watch my students come into the classroom eating chips and soda, refined sugars, bad carbs, and anytime I asked them, why do you guys eat so poorly, a very common response was healthy food just doesn't taste good.
With taste in her mind, Falah started experimenting on a unique recipe inspired by her grandmother. Ingredients include a mixture of nuts, flavorful seeds, honey, and black seeds. It took off, but to this day, she still runs her business from home, meeting roughly 4,000 to 6,000 orders a month. Falah doesn't just want to change people's health, but also tackle hunger as she donates a snack bar to the homeless for each one sold.
We have a social movement and mission behind the company, which means that when we first launched, we would donate a bar for every bar that we sold. And we would donate it to people experiencing homelessness. And as the company has grown and we've expanded and added new product lines to our brand, now we actually donate a percentage of all of our profits towards alleviating world hunger.
Falah says her company has helped more than 200,000 poor people in the U.S. and abroad, including refugees in Syria, Morocco, Palestine, and Gambia. Jaffer Hunt, VOA News, Toledo, Ohio.
Phew, we've made it through another week. Thanks so much for being with us here on VOA Asia. That is our program for today and for this week. We hope you enjoyed the week and enjoyed the programming. We'll be back on Monday. We hope you will as well. And until then, be well.